the rule of three. Two comics, three topics, 10 minutes each. The perfect podcast for your modern lifestyle. Over on the other side, we got Mr. Brian Miller.
Hello.
And today, we're going to be talking later about Brian's road trip and the Christmas story. We're not going to be talking about Philip K. Dick as we promised last week, but we are going to be talking about Dickens.
Oh, there you go.
So you still have a Christmas Dick.
Yeah, as comedians, we're obliged to do something with Dick in it. So this is our way of subverting it, not making it dirty. I literally had an audience member tell me this weekend. He goes, "Man, you know, I didn't really think you were funny, but I respected you because you were talking about clever things. But then you started talking more about sex, and I was like, yeah, this guy's really good." I was like, thank you.
Yeah. How far the art form has fallen.
It wasn't even that he said I had good sex jokes. It's that it came up.
That's it. That's what they want. That's what they want to see. Especially the bachelorette parties.
Yeah. This was a dude with his girlfriend who was not looking thrilled to be with that dude in that moment.
Wow. Huh.
Yeah.
Interesting. But that's irrelevant. We're going to be talking about that in the second segment. But here in the first segment, it's December 19th right now. And by the time this gets put up on the web, we will all know the results of the Electoral College vote.
I mean, we kind of know the results of the Electoral College vote now.
Well, you know, there is a segment of society that I believe is in, I don't know if this phase would be called denial or bargaining, but they are hoping that the Electoral College does something that has never been done in history and decides to recognize that Hillary was the better candidate.
Yeah, well, here's my thing. Obviously, I very much obviously don't want Trump to be president, but part of the reason I don't want that is I'm afraid he's basically going to rip up a pretty good process that we have. And so ripping up the process to keep Trump from ripping up the process is not a very logically sound strategy, you know?
I believe that would be the constitutional version of mutually assured destruction.
Yeah, it really would be, actually. I mean, the consequences of it would be so incredibly vast. I mean, the only scenario I can imagine where that would be a thing, where if he was literally accused of murder and there were, like, charges pending and they were looking pretty strong. You know what I mean? And it would have to be something where the justice system just wasn't able to quite catch up to the timing or some, you know, I mean, I that's the closest even remote thing I can think of.
So, yeah, certainly not.
I don't mean for him specifically, but for any candidate, you know, for the Electoral College to just go, nope, not going to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Perhaps. Or maybe if he passed away, maybe if he did not, maybe if he was he was in hospice at this point. The Electoral College might say, you know, we probably shouldn't, beat William Henry Harrison's record here.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. Or potentially, what the scenario I can imagine it coming into play is if, like you said, let's say we elected somebody and then they died in the interim, but people really didn't want the vice president to be it, the president. So they kicked it back to the House so the House could pick a preferred candidate.
Yeah. It actually does the Constitution does lay out what would happen if something happened to the candidate in between the college and the inauguration.
Oh, really? It's not that just the vice president becomes the president?
I forget. It might be, but I mean,
was
it's
so
actually
your knowledge there, and it turns out it's only slightly more than my own.
Yeah. No, I think it is. I think it does become the vice president, but I mean, it is laid out in the Constitution.
But you could see where if we were in the period before the Electoral College had officially – I mean, I think if the Electoral College names Trump president on a Monday and he croaks of a heart attack on a Wednesday, I assume Mike Pence becomes president. But then you could see where if, say, Trump has his heart attack on a balmy November afternoon at the end of November, well, now you could see the House being like, well, since we control – you know, we're the party in charge. Maybe rather than Mike Pence, we'd rather put up, I don't know, whoever their guy is, if there was a more consensus pick.
Right. I don't know what happens. What happens if something happens to the president in between the Electoral College vote and the counting of the votes in the Senate, which now is almost instantaneous.
Yeah.
But back when the Constitution was written, it took a little bit to get those votes to the Senate.
Which is why inauguration is so far away from the election.
Well, originally it was March 4th.
Right, and they even moved it up. I mean, obviously you needed some time for a transition too. I mean, not something you want to start the next day.
Yeah, it's Michelle is going to be doing her final version of Let's Move.
I don't. Is that a show or is that?
That was her program. That was her to end childhood obesity.
That's funny. Okay, I got it now. Sorry, I just totally didn't get the reference. That's funny. It's a double.
Oh my God, that couldn't have been more typical of the diagram of a joke.
No. It's one of the, it's like once you put the missing piece of information in there, I'm like, oh, everything makes sense. That's funny.
Yeah. I forgot you don't read the newspaper.
Yeah. Or not the part of the newspaper that talks about Michelle Obama's Let's Move. That's a little deeper into the.
It's I have some friends on Facebook that daily post something about you know, please tell, you know, write a letter to the electors, sign the petition.
Yeah.
You know,
it's
this
dumb.
Is the case is Hillary is 2.8 million votes ahead at this point in the recount. And please tell the electors to show their duty as America. They still believe that it might happen.
Out of curiosity, okay, what would you? I think there's downsides to the Electoral College potentially, but then also some very positive sides. Where would you say were the what do you see the good parts about it? What are the bad parts about it in your mind?
The good parts about it is that it allows the states to have a balance with the population. Our republic was never conceived of just being a democracy. It was a republic, and the states were supposed to have just as an equal voice with the general population. So the Electoral College, and especially in this election, shows that it does. Do that in selecting the president, because it's while Hillary had the more popular vote, Donald Trump had about a 10-state advantage.
Right. Okay. And so then, of course, the obvious downside is that you could actually elect somebody who's less fewer people want the person to be president. And the thing I would argue is the most pernicious part of the Electoral College, even though I think it's probably I don't have a better idea, put it that way. It's imperfect, both, you know, it's basically a skewing of reality to try to get a certain balance. But the popular vote has the same effect to some degree as well. But I would say the biggest downside is that it tends to overrepresent rural people and underrepresent urban people. And often urban dwellers end up paying more taxes, and the rural folk tend to get more benefits of state subsidies.
Perhaps. However, you know, it isn't supposed to be just a government of the population. Every single person isn't supposed to be equally represented. The states.
Oh no, I get that. I don't entirely disagree. I agree with that. But at the same time, it is weird to have. I don't know. You could also argue that what we think of as the will of the people is not literally represented.
Yeah, but then again, it is the will of the states. The states, you know, the people who live in the rural areas have more land than the people who live in the cities.
Right, but why does that give them more vote? Because a lot of times
the laws are affecting the rights of property. And certainly, for instance, mineral rights is a great example. Is people who actually own property that have, you know, that have minerals on it and resources, they shouldn't have those resources controlled by someone who lives, you know, thousands of miles away in a big city.
Except that those people who live in that big city are often fundamentally affected by what those people with those mineral resources do. That's where I would definitely part company with you is in in believing that the land has a vote, or that owning land has any implication on your vote. And I don't. I really dislike, as a city dweller.
But the land does have the vote. It's whereas you know you're automatically saying, well, the air. That is going to be polluted by the people abusing those resources. Certainly, the people in the big cities have a say in that. But also, there's just as much chance that the people in the big cities can say, "I think that we should take all the trees that are on this person's land and cut them down, and because we need lumber." And that person who actually owns the land and owns the trees would not have a say in it. His rights of property could be abused by people who live thousands of miles away from that property.
Yeah, I have an argument against that, but we don't have time for it because we're at the end of the segment. Yeah. Good stuff. Yeah. No, I agree. I think the Electoral College is slippery because I don't know that there's a better way around it, but I don't like it.
Dashing through the snow in a one-horse open sleigh, o'er the fields we go, laughing all the way. Bells on bobtail ring, making spirits bright.
And back on our Christmas episode of Rule of Three, our second Christmas episode of Rule of Three, actually. We'll be talking holidays in the next segment. But first, a little holiday comedy tale. Of traveling in a blizzard.
This is actually our second holiday segment, isn't it? Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Second annual. We can say that, and it's not. there's a great line in the book Wonder Boys, which is also in the movie, where he says, only a state-run college could conceive of the first annual anything. But because it's funny, it's like first annual grammar fest, and the guy's just scowling at the sign. But I digress. I was out on the road this weekend. By the way, I found out the perfect weather forecasting system. If you want to know what winter weather is going to be like, just go to my website and check when I'm going to be out of town doing shows. And if I'm out of town, definitely snow. 100% chance of snow.
Oh my gosh! Yeah, this is the second time you've been caught in
third,
it.
Actually. Third, actually.
Wow.
Me and my buddy had to leave a day early to miss that blizzard.
Yeah, we talked about that on the cast.
I did a corporate 2 weeks ago in Winona, Minnesota, that was supposed to take 2 hours to get to, and took an hour and or it took like 2 hours and 45 minutes, 3.5 hours, somewhere around there, each way. Drove through a blizzard there, or just a big snowstorm, and then this, holy smokes! I had to leave way early to get to the place, and I can say the name of the place because it was a wonderful venue, Rookie Sports Pub in Stevens Point. Really nice. You never know what to expect with those bar one-nighters. And
yeah, I think I've done that one.
Yeah, really nice crowd, really nice people. And there's a little restaurant attached to the bar, and your hotel's right next door, which turned out to be very fortunate because after I got there, about 8 inches of snow fell in just a short number of hours.
Wow.
And I mean, we're talking. I mean, it was snowy. So I was pretty much stuck in the complex. But I left.
The people all made it.
Yeah. Oh, and then, of course, this being Wisconsin, people don't goof around with the weather. Nobody cares. Yeah, there was a good crowd. There was like a ballpark, I don't know, 75 or 100 people. Like it was, you know.
Yeah. You will actually, I think in Wisconsin, if you have 8 inches of snow, you're going to have a better turnout. Than if the weather's clear.
Yeah, I mean it's like, hey, we got to go have fun. It's snowing or something. Yeah, no, but it was great, and they were a really yeah, awesome crowd. They were fantastic.
Let's go drive in it.
Right, and so I left. I did the Andrew Lee's radio show, Justice and Drew, with him and John Justice, and then I left. I basically left from the radio station at like 9:30 in the morning, just to start the drive. So I beat the snow there. So I go over to the venue, and I'm talking to the manager, and we're getting ready to start the show, and the opener's not there, and he's I'm stuck in traffic. He says he's stuck in traffic, by the way, which is like, well, I don't know if traffic is exactly what you would call this, but okay. So it gets to be about – the show was supposed to start at 7:30. There was a misprint or something to that on the itinerary. It's actually 8. So me and the opener, key fact, thought the show was supposed to start at 7:30. Show's actually at 8. At about 8:15, though, the manager's like, "Man, this guy's not here. The crowd's getting restless. It's like snowing out there.
They do that though. A lot of times, the booker will do that because they know our tendencies.
True, and that is true. But this particular booker, I will say, normally always has the regular times on the itinerary. Huh. But here's the thing:
well, the club might
tell the booker to
do it. And I'll tell you what, it didn't hurt my feelings at all to find out I had an extra half hour. You know? I was like, yeah. Great, this is awesome. The manager, really nice guy, was like, hey, can you mind just going on? This guy's supposed to be – he just told me he's like 10 miles out. Just go up and do a couple of minutes and then to get the show going. And he's like, you can just chip that off your time at the end. Bring the guy up. And I'm like, that's a very reasonable request, right? I mean, the show really needed to get started. So I'm like, yeah, of course,
yeah,
man.
No, absolutely. Yeah. The worst thing clubs can do, and especially the bar gigs do this, the people aren't there in the room, so they hold the show 15 minutes.
Right. And then everyone, yeah, it's like you start the show and next week people come in.
Yeah, then the next week people are well, you know, it didn't start till quarter after, so there's no reason to get there at 8.
Yep.
And then so the next time they hold it till 8:30, and eventually they work their way around the clock. Eventually they don't start an 8 o'clock show until 9:30.
Yeah. And then it's weirdly then new people don't know that, show up on time, get annoyed, don't come back. It's the beginning of the end. You know, it's a terrible idea.
Right. So, and part of the reason, and this is what I believe in some of these gigs. Mm-hmm. I'm sure not this, not yours, but in some of these gigs, the reason why people get there late is that they don't want to sit through the first act.
Oh, well, a lot of people, especially if they haven't been to comedy, kind of think it's going to be like music. And you're like, you know, I show up to concerts during the opening band sometimes. I don't necessarily bust but to get there, you know, ooh, we got to see the first chord of the opener, you know, like if they're on, you know, but the comedy doesn't like that.
But it could also be people that have seen the show before and their attitude is, you know, that first guy is never really funny.
Right.
So why don't we have some drinks here at home and take our time getting there? So we'll get there in plenty of time to see the main act.
Right. But all these people were here. They were on time. Apparently they came to the shows pretty regularly. People were excited. You know, you could see they were like, let's go. Sure. And I heard them talking about other comics and I was excited about the show. And so the manager's like, man, you mind going on and do a few minutes until this guy gets here and I'll wave my hat at you. And I was like, yeah, sure. No problem. So I go up there and start doing some crowd work, having a good time, do a couple jokes, do some more crowd work. Guy's still not there. Do some more crowd work. Just launch into just a bit. I just did a whole chunk from the middle of my set for a while and it's going great. I'm having a good time. I looked down at my phone. It's like 32 minutes into my show.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm only supposed to do an hour. I'm the headliner, by the way. I'm 32 minutes in, so I turned to the audience. I told them what was going on so that they knew what was up, and they were all totally with it. And I said, well, you know, I don't think this guy's showing up. So you guys, this is the show. We all cool with that? And everyone's like, yeah. And I was like, now I'm thinking, like, you know what? This would be an interesting challenge. I'm going to see if I can do an hour and a half. I think I can. And you have to be decent. I'm not going to punish these poor people, you know? So I just start doing my set, and I get a little ways in, and then I see a hat being waved and a guy panting, taking off a snowy coat, you know, and I'm like, okay, two and two together. So I intro this guy, bring him on stage.
And what time is this again? I'm sorry.
Do what?
I went away there for a second. What time is this into your act?
Oh, about 35, 36 minutes.
So, okay. Oh, after you've already said, let's just run the show.
Yeah. After I've already said that. And then started a chunk of my set that I've now stopped.
Wow.
So I'm like, okay, whatever.
You're kind.
You know, I got plenty of jokes left. That I'm not worried about. So I said, all right, introduce this guy, bring him up. He goes on stage, starts doing quite well considering the crowd, you know, was pretty warmed up.
Sure.
He's doing all right, I should say.
Sure. He's headlining at this point.
Yeah. Basically, I've just featured for this. Yuts. So I go have a drink at the bar, just decompress. I'm pretty mad. I text Emily Galati and a couple of friends to complain about this guy. And then I go back up and he's still on stage. All right, whatever. Then this guy just keeps going and keeps going, runs his light. So now he's at like 40 minutes. Supposed to do like 25. So I'm standing at the edge of the stage waving my phone at him. Hey, get off, man. So the guy goes, he nods at me, whatever, and he's like, I'm blah, good night. Hangs up, puts the mic up and walks off. Doesn't re-intro me, nothing. So I'm still contractually obligated for 25 more minutes, so I go back up, restart the show to a confused group of people who feel like the show is done, and do 25 more minutes from the middle of my set.
Wow.
Then afterwards, I get on stage, and the not very apologetic at all dude He's like, well, man, I left early, but there was traffic. And I said, hey, was there some confusion? Like, did you think you were headlining? He goes, oh, well, I mean, I headline sometimes too, so I figured since I was late, we would just switch.
Yeah, no, that was my feeling what happened.
Yeah, that's like the most not his decision to make.
Well, it's also a means that he was thinking. I mean, he might have purposely used the snow as an excuse. I mean, there was a really good chance that he thought, yeah, I should be headlining. I shouldn't have to open for this guy. I should be headlining, and what I will do is I will use the snow as an excuse to make him middle.
Could be. I mean, I don't know. I think he was just very casually commenting. Which, by the way, if this dude thought he should be headlining, maybe he should ever try doing a show or festival outside of the city in which he lives. Just a suggestion that I might have. Maybe TV or festival credits would help further that. But it was like, yeah, so you screwed up, and so you just turned yourself into the headliner? The happy ending of the story is the manager of the club was also unimpressed with this with this particular take on the matter, and was a super nice guy, and the crowd was super nice, so I had a fine time. I was gonna ask, maybe sometime I'll ask you what your worst opener stories was, because we're right to the end of the segment.
Sadly out of time.
Wassail all over the town. Our bread it is white, and our ale it is brown. Our bowl it is made of the white maple tree. With a wassailing bowl we'll dream.
And on the final segment of Rule of Three, next to last final segment of the year. That's like one of those weird sports statistics. You know, they're like, he throws very poorly on the road on a Monday against teams who wear white pants. And you're like, I don't know that that's... Viable number.
Oh my gosh, and next week will be our end of year wrap up show.
Yes, the year in review, second annual year in review, as we learned.
we get to do that now.
Yeah. And we'll actually review an entire year we've actually podcasted about. You know, a lot of people just do like a clip show where they just put a bunch of clips together and edit them together and they're like, oh, there we go, best of, you know, to save time. It would be, it's just so much easier for us to record a new half hour than it would be to go back and do that.
Yeah.
Would quintuple the workload.
That only takes a half hour.
Yeah, right.
The reason why most people do best of shows is because, they have college interns doing the editing.
Yeah, right. Ooh, we should apply for some Rule of Three interns. That'd be handy. Get somebody from the college to come over and file some papers or whatever. Chicago College and Minneapolis College, and they give like sister college credit type thing, you know.
And actually, usually when they're doing a best of show, the host who's normally on at that time is packing his things because he got fired.
Oh yeah, that's the other one. Yeah, you're right.
Because Satan runs showbiz, and he thinks it's funny when people get fired over the holidays. And broadcast all the time that's when you get fired. Between Thanksgiving and New Year's, that's when everybody in broadcast panics.
Yeah. Speaking of getting fired over the holidays, ooh, what a transition. This is a good one. I was reading a Christmas Carol the other day. Have you ever read A Christmas Carol?
Oh yeah,
yeah. Because you know a lot, and my I had not read it until just a couple years ago. You know, certainly I was familiar. I'd seen movie adaptations and a play, I'm sure. Or whatever. Right.
No. I've read it several times. I started reading it. It was an annual tradition for me. I started back in high school. I would read it every year.
Yeah, I've been doing that for the last couple of 3 years now. Because it is, you know, fairly short, but it's really so good. It's really really good. I think it's one of those things. Probably Star Wars will become this sooner rather than later, where the ubiquity and the watered down nature of the thing itself comes to kind of misrepresent the quality and the coolness of the original. You know, like Empire is always going to be a good movie.
Yeah, okay. Okay, I got what you're saying.
Yeah. Because, like, you just, it's like, it's become such an institution that you're like, oh, yeah, Christmas Carol. You know, every DuckTales, Good Damn Times, you know, you pick your TV show, they do an episode where there's a.
The Happy Days. I think Happy Days did a version of it.
I'm sure Happy Days did a version of it. I mean, yeah, there's.
There's probably a few versions that you have to go. behind the curtain in your video store to see.
Oh, I'm sure there's some of those.
But it's actually too, that's such a great analogy, because much the way Star Wars,
Christmas with Carol.
Did you just Google
no,
that?
No, I just came up with it. The old porn. Me and my buddy have a game where it's like we have a game where we go back and forth, and you have to pornify a title of a movie, but you have to do like speed chess, and the first person to not think of a title loses. And they have to be original, and so my brain can go to that pretty quickly.
Wow, that was good.
Just a little secret skill I have. Some people can sew. I can come up with porn titles.
But, when Star Wars came out, too, it's people don't put it in the context of time. There's before Star Wars, before 2001, most space science fiction films were all like model rockets on fishing lines.
Yeah. And a lot of, the thing from beyond a thousand other things and whatnot,
Right. But 2001, for the first time, actually was able to, the special effects were so amazing that they actually made you look like you were in space. And Kubrick was so fascinated by the special effects that he let them run for hours longer than they should have.
Which is interesting if you think about it. There's something – Star Wars has obviously groundbreaking, amazing effects. But Star Wars in no point looks like anyone's ever in space. There's not a single second of anti-gravity in all of the Star Wars movies.
Huh.
If you think about it.
Huh. Nope, you're right.
They just turn space into either the ocean or the sky, depending on what scene.
Yeah, but I mean, there were also spaceships and stuff, and stuff like that.
Oh, no, I'm not. Of course.
And they look real.
It's just occurring to me, though, that, like, Star Wars makes no attempt at like a realistic depiction of space, or even utilizing that as a,
Yeah, no.
It would be un-Star Warsy to see. If anything floats, it better be force related. Otherwise, it doesn't seem to fit.
That is a fascinating point.
Yeah.
It's but what I was saying was it took 2001 special effects, and added car crashes, essentially.
Yeah, no, that's totally true.
And made it really watchable. And at the time, it was just so revolutionary. And I think Dickens' A Christmas Carol, back to the original part of the story, the topic, I think it was the same thing. It's the idea of representing time periods as a spirit that you could actually communicate with, I think was a really... it was really a literary revolution. I don't know enough about literature to make this call, but I'm going to pretend I do.
I mean, it's a little bit like maybe the Greek idea of gods is incarnate. So you'd have the god of time or the god of water. But the kind of personification of a spirit as opposed to the master of a dominion is a sort of different thing. It's an interesting poetic device, and it's
done so well. The ghost of Christmas Past is waif-like and pale,
sure,
and the ghost of Christmas Present is obese and jolly, and the one of Christmas Future is just a shadow. Just a foreboding shadow. I mean, really, really nice the way all those three ghosts are depicted.
Absolutely. And then I'm concurrently also reading a book about – it's called The Man Who Invented Christmas. And it's something I never thought about. But Dickens basically invented the modern version of Christmas. Particularly we think of Christmas as like this time of redemption. Particularly – I mean people would give to charity at Christmas. Hey, it's the holidays. Everybody has a – that existed before. But the idea of gift giving, and particularly of the redemption arc at Christmas, everyone's sort of looking for that personal last chance to make good. That really all comes from A Christmas Carol, and that is like almost as much a secular. That is like a secular thing that has taken on a kind of religious significance in the culture.
Huh.
If you think of that is really right up there with the Jesus tale in our culture in terms of like. Things we sort of observe.
Well, it's kind of become the Christian Rosh Hashanah.
Yeah, absolutely. But paired with the, of course.
But even it was, even in Dickens' time, it was. I mean, wassailing was a version of trick or treating.
Mm-hmm.
that would occur. So even then, and I think it actually that actually goes back to even Roman times, where I believe it was the feast of Saturn, where
it's also the winter solstice, right?
Masters would switch places with their servants, and that they would actually wait on their servants for a week. And that, I mean, that's where that comes from. So there is roots of it, but it becomes much more distinct in post Dickens.
Yeah, and very kind of codified into the season. And it's interesting. Yeah, I never thought about it. He almost has written a kind of secular scripture that has worked its way into the whole consciousness. Which is interesting to see. Then something of that sort of subtle psychological significance then played out in like an episode of Rescue Rangers, Chippendales, or, you know, like a Bugs Bunny riff on it. And you're like, yeah, because it's, but I mean, that's the true mark of pervading the culture, I guess, is that like,
at every point,
from high and low, it soaks in.
No, you're absolutely right. And it's, it is in essence, it is the first, I believe the first Christmas miracle, which has become, you know, such a central point that even by the 80s, when the Simpsons did their first Christmas mm-hmm. special, it was based on the it was even hacked by then.
Yeah.
And now with the Hallmark channel doing all those Christmas movies, it's the idea of a Christmas miracle is post hack.
Yeah. It's all the way around, and it's all thanks to Dickens too. I would say everybody, if you haven't yet, read A Christmas Carol and read some more Dickens too. Tale of Two Cities, pretty awesome, but read A Christmas Carol on the holidays. It's very nice. It's very calming and surprising. It's comforting in its familiarity, but also surprising in its still relevant execution. But speaking of relevant, the segment barely still relevant.
While it's still relevant, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, Happy Hanukkah to all our listeners. Catch these and all the other episodes at timslagle.com. We're also on iTunes.
Yep, and at my website at brianmillercomedy.com, and look at me on Real Brian Miller on Twitter, where I post stuff.
And we'll see you next week.